That's all right.
Yeah, it's good. Okay, we're eating.
Yes, it's delicious.
What were you saying? Right before?
I don't know.
I remember I was saying, we put love in our food. Yeah. Which, do you feel like there's love in that food?
Yes.
And then the phone rang, so. Talking about soul food.
Yeah, what is soul food?
I don't want to steal cliched phraseology from Erykah Badu, but I will. She says it's food for your soul, like feeds your soul. I think that's true. I think it's circular. I think soul food is like made with your soul, or like you put your essence in your food. You can't separate yourself. You know, I'm calling it love. You know, there's a short story. I have no idea what it's called. About, and this is across cultures. We are calling it soul food from where we are. But the concept of soul food is universal. And I just think it's putting yourself in your food and not just being like, I'm disconnected. Like, you know. The fable is, this woman is making, you know, she's essentially a slave and she makes cheese. She's no one. She has like no name. It's an old story. It's like kind of maybe a Dutch culture, let's say. She just makes cheese and she makes cheese and she makes cheese and she makes cheese. And then there's some scandal. I don't know what happens. And she gets fired. And, you know, this guy's obsessed with her cheese. You know, with the churning or making curd from hand. Like, that's all she does. 24/7, she makes it for this entire village. She gets fired. And this guy has been... Before he fired her, he was like, you write down the recipe for the cheese. Exactly. Write it down 20 times. I have to have it, but you have to leave. And she was like, okay. And he, you know, I imagine a scene like the first rendition of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory with Gene Wilder, where Veruca is trying to get everyone to find the golden ticket. And there's like hundreds of people opening candy bars. I feel like it's that. This guy was like, okay, here's the recipe. Everyone make cheese, and whoever makes the cheese that tastes exactly like hers will get the job. No one could do it. He got rid of all of those people. He tried to make the cheese himself. Anyway, long story short, he couldn't make it. He followed the recipe exactly. And it turned out that the woman, she did the same thing all the time, is that the secret ingredient was her sweat. She was like locked in a kitchen all day with no ventilation making this cheese, and she would sweat into the cheese, and that was like the missing ingredient, which is like, you know, she's a slave. She's like putting her, that's a very literal transition of like putting herself in the food. But I think it's like that. Like, she only existed to make cheese, you know. And then thinking about that, like, I don't only exist to make food, but when I make food and when people care enough about the food that they're making and have a relationship with the food and bring that to the table or put their soul in it or put their sweat in it or harvest it or whatever, I think that all counts in the meal that you create. Like, I think we're eating right now is soul food. It's not going to be in a traditional soul food restaurant, or maybe it is if it's a vegan one, if it's banging. You know, it's got the ingredients, they're fresh, they're good, there's a union of flavors, and there's aspects of, like, things that might be considered traditional to food, like, you know, greens, you know, but it's vegan, so, like, vegan is, like, neo-soul food, But I think the concept is the same, and I think it's a universal concept, not just like from people of African descent from the South. I think that's a starting point, and I think when stories get shared, there'll probably be a thread. This is awesome. I gotta eat because I'm starving.
Yeah, let's eat. Do you know there's a vegan place in Ocean View, Virginia, Norfolk?
Mm-hmm. My aunt told me.
Elena's.
My aunt told me about it.
It's very good. My parents are obsessed with it.
My aunt's gonna probably force me to go there. She's into it now. She's like, let's go. I'm gonna take you. Let's eat. Let's go. I'm walking outside. She's getting thin. I was like, don't get too thin, because what am I gonna snuggle on?
What's your aunt's name?
Her birth name is Evelyn Hyman. But I call her Auntie Chick. Chick is her earliest nickname as a child. Because my mom and her would ride around on their tricycles. And my aunt would wear this little chicken, this outfit that had like a chicken on it. So they call her Chickie, which got shortened to Chick as an adult. So I call her Auntie Chick. And my mom, her birth name is Bertha. Her legal name is Bertha Arnold. And my aunt's birth name is Evelyn Arnold. But it's Hyman Smith now from marriage. But my mom would wear a Mickey Mouse hat that was too big. Like when you go to Disneyland and they give you this stupid black cap thing with the ears. My mom would wear that like it was a religion. And so they called her Mickey, which was short for Mickey Mouse. And it stuck. Which is definitely more fun than Bertha, but
I need more food.
Okay? Yeah, you totally won. I don't even know.
I was eating while you were talking.
It did take a lot more, but I'm gonna leave some for you. I don't know. I think I'm eating the portion. Man, this is how I eat. It's also counter to my culture.
What is?
Eating several tiny meals. I eat like every 2 hours, and I eat like a portion that is about the size of a fist and a half. I eat until I'm full, and then I stop eating. And I eat when I'm hungry, which is usually every 2 to 3 hours. My family... Yo, like around Thanksgiving, basically Thanksgiving is like, if you've not been cooking for an entire 24 hours before the meal, it's not valid. And then you must eat for like 6 hours. And you must eat 3 plates of food. And by plate, I mean a tiny mountain. And then you must unbutton your pants and like, be comatose. Certainly, like, don't do yoga, which I do. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna stretch now, and then I'm gonna go for a walk, and then, you know, watch, you know, Neil Patrick Harris on Being Funny.
But that's Thanksgiving, so everyone's trying to overdo it, right?
Yeah, but in general, my family overeats, and they are very centered around dinner. Some cultures are centered around lunch as the this is the meal that you must sit down and we're gonna have our time. Like in Europe, it's like everything closes. We gotta eat and then we gotta take a nap and then we're gonna work for 20 more hours. Be fine. I'm a robot, so I consume something at 9 and then I consume something at 11 and then I consume something at 1 or 2 and then I consume something definitely at 4. 11 and 4, like clockwork. And then I'm like, maybe I'll have something at 7 or 9, depending on if I have a class. I'll usually also always have a little snacky in my bag. I'm a grazer, which is not, I don't centralize one, there's no one meal that is more important than the other. It's about eating when I'm hungry and not eating in excess. Sometimes I do overeat, and I'm like, okay, I'm now making a conscious decision to overeat. Mm-hmm. And I know what that's going to feel like. Then I walk it out. Because it's like slightly uncomfortable. I'm like, ooh, I feel slightly bloated. But it was worth it. Now I'm going to go for a walk.
In college, you used to make yak. Can you explain yak?
Mm-hmm. It's Southern ghetto Chinese. I'm making the gesture again in quotations. Soul food. You go to, and people try and get it outside of this very small area in Portsmouth, Virginia. You might be able to go to Norfolk, one or two places. If you're in like a ghetto, if there's projects and there's a Chinese food place, you might be able to get it. Basically, I'm sure that the way it went down, because my aunt has investigated it, because everyone is obsessed with it when they eat it. They're like, what is this? And it's not Chinese. It has not, if you go to a Chinese person, it has nothing. What the yak is a type of noodle. So if you go to a Chinese restaurant, you'll have like lo mein, you'll have yak a mein, you'll have, you know, different types of noodle.
I'm just gonna turn it
towards you. Okay.
Okay.
It's a noodle. Yak is a noodle in Portsmouth, Virginia, in the ghetto specifically. Probably near projects. There's probably some drugs. They take this noodle and they add ketchup and soy sauce and cayenne pepper, MSG, although now MSG is a taboo, so now you can get no MSG. But, you know, I'm from a time where you could buy MSG, you can still buy it. Accent, you know, it's just MSG, and I love the branding of Accent. It was a very good label. And it's just like, you're going to accent your food. So MSG was an ingredient. And then you could get it with chicken. Traditionally, you get it with chicken, and also they throw an egg on top, like a raw egg, and then everything's so hot, you stir the egg in, and it cooks the egg, which is foul to me. I hate eggs. So I would just, and my aunt's allergic to onions, and I've never got it with chicken. So it's really just ketchup, soy sauce, cayenne pepper, oh, and apple cider vinegar over these noodles, and you stir it all together, and it creates this union of addictive flavors. Which is basically like, oh, you've got some lycopene and some salt and some crack. And by crack, I mean MSG. And you're like, oh, this tastes good. And it cost like nothing. I think that's why it was popular in the ghetto. So some Chinese person was like, I'm going to do this. Oh, these black folks like this. Like, and it became its own thing. Other places in this region started making it because people were like, you got any yak? And it's really easy to make. You know, and it's like comfort food, but it's so bad. Every time I go to Virginia, I'm like, can we go get some yak? Can we go get it? And I'll play Miss Pac-Man, and I'll get the yak, and then I will feel gross about 2 minutes after I eat it. Yeah. But it's still good.
So you can just go and get it at a Chinese place.
Yeah, or you can go to Asian supermarket and get the noodles and all the ingredients and make it. Yeah. I can make it because I know how it's supposed to taste. If you just like roll up and say, what do I have in my fridge? Oh, I have ketchup and soy sauce and cider vinegar and this onion. I'm going to make yak. This balance of flavors. So I make it how my aunt makes it and she makes it. Because that's another thing. They give you the ingredients, and then you get to doctor it. So you control, they give you the base of the soy sauce and the ketchup. And then you get to add how much vinegar and how much cayenne, you know.
Wait, is it like those places where they cook the food in front of you?
No, they cook it in the back, and they just bring you a thing out, and they give you a fork. It's actually a communal fork that sits in a greasy jar with hot, greasy water, and they give you the container open, and you know, you stir it, and then you doctor it to your taste. So I make it the way my aunt makes it, which is good. But you could get it, and it will taste like it, but it won't have like, you know, it's personal. You know, it's like Burger King or whatever their slogan is.
Wait, what is the fork doing? You're not scooping out the sauce.
You gotta stir it.
You're stirring it. So if you don't stir it enough.
You gotta get the union of the flavors.
Why do you have to do it?
Because you're making it how you want it to taste.
But isn't it more like, yeah, you have to stir it, but who decides how much of what thing is in there?
You do. Like they just put, they're like soy sauce, noodles, onion, whatever ingredients you say, egg, chicken, that is in there. Then they have a little tray with the greasy fork container with the vinegar, the cayenne pepper, MSG, not anymore, salt. I'm like, how could you add salt? People add salt. I'm just like, oh, this is how I'm like, I'm in the South. These people are adding salt to the saltiest thing I've ever eaten in my life. And then you can ask for, like, can I have a little more of this? So, but you're just, like, stirring. You can add more soy sauce. There's soy sauce there, too. They don't give you any more ketchup, but you can add more soy sauce, which I always do. And I add a lot of vinegar, and I'm pretty heavy on the cayenne because I like pepper. I like spicy food. And then you stir it with the fork, and you taste it, which is completely unsanitary. And then you stir it again, and you taste it, and you add, and then you put the fork in the communal greasy thing. So sometimes I'm like, can I have a plastic fork so that I can do my own thing? Because that's how cooties be spreading.
Oh, I meant to ask you, where did you first hear the story of the cheese-making slave?
Oh. Yeah, that story I was modeling for a very well-known artist in Philadelphia. She's an amazing painter. Her name's Martha Erlbacher. She would always play, when I modeled, she would play books on tape, which is great because I'm sitting for a really long time. Like I would sit for her for a really long time. And this was a book on tape, which is why I have no idea what it's called, because I just listened to it. I didn't see it. There was no image. I don't know the author. It was just like some guy saying the story. This was pre. No, it wasn't pre. But it was the internet was not common. So I'm sure if you do like sleeve, cheese balls, sweat, something would come up. Who knows? We might accidentally get some porn, but I don't know. Get a librarian to do a Boolean search.
So what's the difference? Like, what's an example of something that is totally not soul food? Like, that you have, that someone has not put themselves into?
McDonald's.
Obviously.
Okay, like, something, I remember in Oberlin, because I'm sure that's a chain, so that's like obvi, versus franchise versus one-offs. I babysat for a family in Oberlin. Neither of the parents cooked. I came in, and also being a nanny in Paris, neither of the parents cooked. And I just came in and started cooking for their kids, and they were like, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm cooking. Like, don't you guys, it's called cooking? Like, here I am. Here's some ingredients I'm going to make. And they were like, I've never seen that before. So one example of not soul food is the kids that I babysat for in Oberlin only ate things out of a can and things that were frozen. So there was a lot of Stouffer's and a lot of like Green Giant string beans. So they were eating allegedly balanced meals, but it was all processed. And because neither of the parents knew how to cook. They had no idea how to cook. I like chopped something and they were like, that's amazing that you take the time. I was like, what are you talking about? It takes 2 seconds. By the time you thaw that dinner, I will have cooked something. Like, and it will have flavor. So the kids became obsessed with me, which is why I worked for them for so long. The family in Paris, they did cook, but without thought. There was no thought. There was kind of like, I need to have this ingredient and this ingredient and this ingredient and this ingredient to make sure the child is getting these nutrients. It's not like I'm taking a moment, I'm being present, I'm like creating an art and I'm going to give it to my child to nourish them. It's like a checklist, and which is a disconnect from food, I guess. Even though there is a connection with food differently in Paris because they don't hide where their meat comes from, which I actually appreciated. They'll be like, here is the pig that you are going to eat later. Like, I'm slicing it in front of you. Here is its face. I'm putting it in a shopping cart, which is gross to me, but they don't, it's not a taboo to be like, okay, this meat, and they're not like trying to encase it in plastic and being like, let's color it and make it look magenta because meat should be magenta. So there's also that connection. But
so you and I ate at Third World Co-op in Oberlin.
Woot woot.
What was your experience of cooking at TWC?
I loved cooking there because they had mad flavors. I think that's why I went there, because there are options for many co-ops. You know, I could have gone to one that was more vegan or, you know, by food or by location. But I chose Third World because the culture, there's more culture. And I really like flavorful foods. Some of those other co-ops, because the idea behind the co-op is that the members would cook. And so if you have a chef that's like Wonder Bread chef, you're going to get Wonder Bread food for 50 people. If you have like diverse cultural mix, and then, you know, whoever gets in the kitchen is going to bring something new. And then if you're co-cooking, it's like, oh, I'm from this culture. I'm from this culture. Let's do it up. Like, it was great. Everyone, you know, collaborated and made tasty. Some people just couldn't cook. And I'm like, it's true. It's true. You can't make any assumptions because you're of this culture. You know how to cook. You just can't do that. Erase that from the vocabulary. But people that can cook, that impregnate their cooking with their culture. Bonus. And then you have collaborations. Double bonus. And so there's really good food. And like, you know, a lot of brown folks, and navigating the kitchen with brown folks and yellow folks, just like people of color moving around a kitchen, it's cool. It was good food, and even when the food wasn't good, it was good company. So it was good for me. You were there.
I was there.
I just need like two more bites.
Yeah, go for it. Yes. I'll wait till you return.
Like, what about you today? And because I'm vegan, when I transitioned from being vegetarian to vegan, my nutritionist was like, easy rule of thumb, eat 5 colors of food at every meal. Like, I don't even think about now, but I just looked at what I made, and I had some garlic. I had some red onion. It was actually purple, which is rare. Green. My protein is tofu, so it's white. And then I had a variety of different colored tomatoes, orange and green. And kind of that dark one that's like a mixture of red and green. Red. So we just won a prize. That's all. I'll agree. And there was no meat involved or any animal products. And I think some stuff you grew, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So we won a lot.
What was the one dish that you made that won your family over?
Oh.
When they were finally Or did it just happen gradually over time?
No, it was greens. Yeah. Which is challenging because I prefer to make greens with onions, and my aunt's allergic to onions. She's always been allergic. I made them with garlic and, like, nothing. It was, like, olive oil, a peck of soy sauce because I was cooking, you know, I wanted my grandmother to be able to eat, so it was low sodium. And red pepper. That was it. And I didn't cook the death out of it, you know. My family, and I think it's part of Soul too, likes to cook, which is great. But back in the day, they would cook the green. They would cook the life out of the green, so the green was no longer green. It was like this grayish, brownish, and everything was mushy, you know, and the ham hocks in there. And it's just a crazy infusion, slow cooking. It's great. But then, so you cook all the nutrients out of the greens and then arrive at this pot liquor, which is the juice of all the greens. And they would drink that. So they would, we don't drink that anymore. It's like beyond, most people don't drink the pot liquor anymore, but that's where all the stuff is. And I'm kind of like, newsflash, people, you could just leave the nutrients in the greens by, like, just cooking them until they're bright. Or not cooking them. It's also an option. But I did try and sneak a little raw kale salad in another one. Only one of my family members was brave enough to eat it. But I was like, kale is awesome. Kale, it's good raw. We can eat it. Yeah, so it was greens. And so it was really simple. And they were like, oh, yeah, this is good. You can make those, make more. You know, and I was like, all right. And then I would make other things. And I'd be like, try this tofu.
How'd that go over?
They will always try it. They'll always try it. And I think one out of five family members will eat it or will request and be like, make sure you make enough for me. These days, I'm off both, like, six pieces of chicken and ham, and then be like, oh, it's tofu. Because, you know, I sneak it in. I'm like, oh, this is a fish fry tofu. It's fried. You're going to eat it. Sneaky. It's like chicken nuggets. It's like
Sometimes I talk to people who are not really from anywhere near the South, and they don't really think of Virginia as being from the South. Do you get that?
Yeah, it's weird. It's South. But I'm from the North, so if I were from, like, Louisiana, I might be like, what the F are you talking about? It's north. I'd be like, isn't there a thing called the Mason-Dixon line? That is my point of reference. I live above that. Yeah.
So if you were going to pass on some food concoction to the next generation... in your tribe, what's a good example of something you'd want to share?
Well, I mean, there's so many things. Well, it would be quick and easy.
Why quick and easy?
Because it's if it's an oral history. By ear, because I'm not a recipe cook, so I'm not going to be like, next generation, here's the recipe box. I'm going to be in a kitchen, you know, or on a video or something, you know. I did a fake art project where I had a cooking show. It was hilarious.
I haven't seen that.
It's a limited edition. I gotta say, I feel like my favorite thing is just kale. You know, there's so many ways to make it, and it's so easy. And you know, you can grow it, so you don't have to be like, oh, I have. Where can I get kale? I just sent some kale seeds to Germany because I was like, do you have kale? They're like, what kale? What is that? An American was like, yeah, and I was like, they don't have it. It doesn't exist. I'm like, I'm sending you some kale seeds because I wanted to be there next summer. Little kale, you know, just sauteed kale with some garlic. It's good. I could eat it for the rest of my life, every meal. It is good.
Kale is your favorite green as opposed to chard or collards or like
mustard. I love mustard and collards and dandelion. I love all of those. And I will buy them and cook them. And sometimes I buy things I've never heard of just to see if it's green. I just, you know, it's probably high in some kind of minerals and something. If it's dark green, if it's hearty, I'll probably eat it. I know if it's bitter, I'll still eat it. Like, it's exciting. But kale, the flavor of kale, it's good. It's good raw. It's good cooked. It's good blanched. It's good shocked. It's good blanched and shocked. It's good sauteed. It's good baked. It's just good. I feel like you can't just roll up and bake spinach. What? It's too weak. Spinach is flimsy. Kale softens nice, but it's tough and it has a really nice flavor. It's my favorite flavor. Goes well with garlic. Goes well by itself. Goes well with balsamic vinegar. Goes well with red pepper. You know. Goes well in a sandwich.
I agree.
Yeah. I love kale so much. That would be it. But, you know, I also am a big fan of broccoli. Broccoli, if I am like, I only have $3 to my name, I'm going to get kale and broccoli and garlic. And I will eat. You know, because like, you can always find rice or something if you're like, oh, I have nothing in the house. David Lynch. His favorite thing is quinoa and broccoli with garlic. He's obsessed with it. I think he eats it every day. And he toasts the quinoa. And he's really cute about it. There's a video of him cooking it. And he's being completely authentically David Lynch. But he's cooking. If you can see that, that's like, what? It's amazing. I'm obsessed with him. So I'm like, broccoli and quinoa and garlic. I love quinoa, but if you don't have it, just broccoli with garlic.
Earlier you were talking about smelling what the other chef was making in the kitchen.
Yep.
And I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit about the sensory, speak a little more about the sensory experience of cooking and how, why is that important or how is it, how does it function?
Well, you know, I don't know if that is universal, but having studied neuroscience, which I'm not going to talk about, the sense of smell, olfactory sense, and neurological pathways and memory, smell as a sense is kind of the deepest, kind of most, gives one of the most impressions, and we get so much information and it triggers so many things, and the way our brain processes it is very complex but very fast. If you are walking down the street and you smell a smell and it instantly triggers like 16 memories, it reminds you of something that takes you back to a place. Or you somehow are like tantalized and you're like, what is that? You know, like we, you know, recognize how our neighborhood smells or people. And it's the same with food. I have a really kind of hyper keen sense of smell. I can tell. And it changed, it shifted a lot when I became vegan because I was taking a lot of toxins out of my body. So it just like dialed it up even more. And I can tell, you know, I had a partner who wasn't vegetarian or vegan. And, you know, that's okay. And I'd be like, you ate pepperoni pizza. And he'd be like, I ate that yesterday. I'm like, yeah, but you smell like pepperoni pizza today. Your sweat smells like grease and pepperoni. Like, and he's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, oh, God, that's disgusting. I can't, like, make out with you. But, you know, it's the same, like, because I am, like, really sensitive to smell, that is, you know, and taste and smell are linked. I mean, if you look it up, people, it's like, they're directly connected. I know one person that actually has a disability where she actually does not have a sense of smell. She's smell blind, and it's actually a disability. And her, the way she experiences the world is different as it is for a blind person or a deaf person, which no one thinks about. But it's a thing, you know, sense of smell. It's a sense. We have five. And so with taste and smell being linked, the information that I'm collecting when I smell something, it directly, like, I have a connect, like a circuit where I'm like, okay, I know what this smells and I know what it's going to taste like and I don't need to taste it. I could just put the flavors together. Like, I'm smelling things, you know, like I was just in your kitchen and I was kind of like, well, I know you said tomatoes and there's a lot of tomatoes. I ate one tomato and my face brain exploded. It was so good. It was the best tomato I've eaten in a while. And there are different kinds. And then I was kind of, you were like, use this. It's, you know, the spice. And I was like, okay, I know what that is. I use it all the time. And I know what that is. I use it all the time. And then I was kind of like, okay, this is what I have. And then I was like, this is what I'm going to add to bring these flavors out. And I didn't taste it at all. Like, while I was cooking, some people are like, you know, that's why they don't eat, because they're tasting the whole time they're cooking. And then they've eaten like a meal because they're trying to get it right and get it right, get it right. I'm just kind of like, well, this is all that. I know what that is. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, okay, this could suck, but it's actually amazing. Like, it pops out and it's like, this is amazing. Okay, cool. Like, it used to be a time when I was a younger chef that I would doubt myself. And I even cook food that's not vegan. Like, I had a dinner party and I smelled the cheese, which smelled disgusting to me because I think cheese is foul as a byproduct. Animal byproduct. It's like mucus to me. But props, if you choose to eat it, go for it. I bought this cheese and I bought blackberries that were like freshly picked and like still warm from the sun. And I just like put them together. And people were like, you're crazy. Like, how did you come up with that? And I was like, I had a moment. Like, I smell the cheese. And I'm like, it needs to go with blackberries. Like, I don't know what's going on. I hate cheese, but like, I have to serve this. And people were like, I wish you could taste this. I'm falling on the floor. It's so good. Like, the blackberry explodes and the cheese. Oh, and I was like, I know. I hate cheese, but I knew what it was going to taste like. I don't need to taste it. You're tasting it and enjoying it. If I tasted it, I would probably throw up. But I knew that it was this marriage. Like, that's just how it is for me. And that's why I enjoy it. It's like why the intaking of a scent and cooking is very meditative for me, because I'm just kind of like really open and aware and just kind of receiving information and just kind of feeling it out, which I think is very much like yoga. You're just kind of like, I'm present and this is what's happening and okay, I'm going to make something. On the smell tip.
Advice that you should go into the food business?
Yeah, all the time. But I already have five jobs. I'm like that freaking In Living Color skit. What, six? You only have six jobs? I have 18 jobs. Like, yeah, I don't need six jobs. I will cook when I love to cook.
What's happening?
Well, I don't know what time it is. I can't be chatting with you all day.
Oh, that doesn't tell you the time.
I know. I was like, this is telling me time that has transpired, but not the time that it is.
It's true. We can't chat all day. I still have to take a shower. 12:52. Wow.
Yeah.
Time flies when you're chatting about selfies.
It does. Yeah. Well, you know, do you want to say anything? Because I have to be somewhere.
Okay. Well, why don't you... Is there anything you'd like to add or that you wanted to mention that we didn't cover?
Yeah. I mean, I think like what I talked about and my experience is part of my identity, but food, I mean, like develop a healthy relationship with food. It doesn't matter like if you think you can cook or if you feel like you don't know how, or if you were only raised a certain way and you don't come from this culture, like it doesn't matter. Just like develop a healthy relationship with food. It's we all come from like gathering food. So it's in us. We just like forget. And I think it's like slow food or any food is about like this, having this healthy relationship, and then you will be healthy and feel healthy, and it'll be some good times. I think that's it. Like, for me, it's like, you know, get awesome with your food.
What's up with eating disorders? 'Cause that's, I mean, I know that Americans, a lot of them overeat, or they have an unhealthy relationship with food because they are eating badly. But then the eating disorder seems to be the extreme example of a bad relationship.
Yeah. The media.
You think it's the media?
Well, yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, I would be hard pressed in my catalog of memory to find some third world country with virtually no media. Someone that has never, or even like not even third world, someone that is rural, Amish or something, unless it's actually some kind of psychological issue, because that can be the case. There aren't any. There just aren't.
There aren't any eating.
Yeah, it's not like common. It's not like, oh, this Amish guy on Rammspringer is like, oh, I'm anorexic. Like, it's not gonna. Sorry. They're also not obese. They work and they eat, and it's like, you know, that's it. There's not like, someone forced me to, I don't know how those things arrive. I want to look like a Vogue model, so I'm gonna do this. Images that somebody decided that we needed to be bombarded with. That is my own personal opinion. But, you know, someone should look at it. I'm not talking about, like, starvation as a result of being in poverty as an eating disorder. I'm talking about, like, starving yourself. or, like, drugs. It's like, I feel like it's all, like, you must look like this. Fuck that.
I read this book that on one of the chapters it talks about the arrival of bulimia in South Korea.
It arrived.
It arrived because there was one girl had it, and then more and more people started having it, and they were trying to figure out how it got there.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it was like an import from here.
It was imported from somewhere.
Globalization.
No, I'm gonna move to a fallout shelter. I have to go.
Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, will you, before you go, will you say again your full name and where you're from and where you live now? And just so I can have the tail end.
My full name is Joy Mariama Smith. I am from and currently live in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I was still born on July 1st, 1976. Is that it?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.